Hey, everybody, it's Andy. Welcome or welcome back to the Decatur City Church Podcast. At the end of this episode, we would love it if you would take just a moment to download the Decatur City Church app, where you can find access to all of our recent message content. And the app is the easiest way to share this content with a friend. But most importantly, I hope you enjoy the following presentation, and I hope it inspires you to take your next step in your faith journey.
My question is, if that's the ovation that I get, do you guys throw like a parade for Andy Stanley, or how do you top that? Hey, it really is so fun to be back. It's so fun to see this chapter of Decatur City Church, which you're just doing with this conference center hotel room is amazing. And any place that you can order room service during the worship set is a win for me, you know? It's like, I'll take the eggs Benedict, and you are good. Thank you. So this is fun. I love Decatur City Church. And honestly, a big part of that is I really do love your pastor, Tinsley. I just think you're a leader worth following. I really believe in you, even if you are an Auburn Tiger. He mentioned I'm from the city of Athens. So actually, on behalf of the entire city of Athens and the University of Georgia, we want to say congratulations to the SEC West champion, Auburn Tigers. Not the SEC champions, obviously, but the SEC West Tigers. So that's better than nothing. But really is so fun to be here today. And I get to share my story. Today, I'm actually going to share with you my least favorite story to tell. And when I say that, I don't know if you have one that comes to mind for you. Perhaps it's the one thing you just hate it when your partner brings it up, or it's the one thing when you're kind of high school or college buddies or gals are back together, you're just like, please don't let this come up. Your least favorite story to tell. Today, I'm going to tell you mine. But before I do that, I want to introduce you to perhaps my favorite story to tell, and that's my family. This is my wife, Laura, and these are our two girls, Kate and Avery. We've been married for about 5.5 years, and these girls are unbelievable. They're so fun. In fact, people tell me things. I've had this conversation multiple times. They say, hey, when you post something on your Insta story and it's not of your girls, it makes me mad. Please only post about them, not about you. So they are the most fun, most sweet, most hilarious, wonderful part of my life. But today I don't want to talk about this. And some of y'all know my story and some of you don't. I'm 32 years old. And when I was 23, my first marriage ended. And I didn't want it to. And I did a lot of things to try to save it, but I couldn't. And it's going to take a little bit of courage from you today. And it's going to take a little bit of courage from me today. But I actually want to talk about that, if it's okay with you. And the wonderful, hilarious irony is that for a lot of the last several years, my biggest fear would be that I would walk into a church and some guy would be on stage talking about this very subject. And how funny is it that today I am that guy? And if you've ever experienced it before, you know it's just kind of a painful, sensitive, awkward sort of subject. And you know, if you've gone through it before, we have just experienced something that the other maybe 60% of the room has not. So I get to share from our perspective today. And I'm not going to beat anybody up with my words. They always describe Jesus' message as good news. So I'm going to try to be, you know, as encouraging as I can be today, but also want to be as honest as I can be today. And everybody's story is different. I think that's important to acknowledge. So, you know, I'm not going to be able to hit every little nuanced thing of your story and your journey. We all have a different story. I'm just going to share mine. You'll have to sort of take from it what you can. And I know that when you throw out the word divorce in a room this size with this many people in it, there's so many opinions. There's all sorts of emotions and opinions. We're not going to get to agree. We're not going to agree on everything today. And I just want to tell you up front, that is okay. That's okay. In fact, the only thing we can probably all agree on is that it's just kind of a weighty, serious, heavy kind of topic. I love how C.S. Lewis described it in his book, Mere Christianity. He had a pretty interesting perspective. His wife was actually divorced before they met. And this is how he described this whole big topic. He said they, being the Christians, because Christians love to debate things like this. He said they all regard divorce as something like cutting up a body. It's like a kind of surgical operation. It's messy. It's gory. Some of them think the operation is so violent that it cannot be done at all. And others admit that it's a desperate remedy in extreme cases. But they are all agreed that it is more like having both your legs cut off than it is dissolving a business partnership or even deserting a regiment. And some of you know what that feels like. So before we jump into the talk today, I just want to tell you, if any part of this is in your story, I just want to tell you, I'm sorry. The pain that you had to go through, the shame that you still carry with you, I know exactly what that feels like. You feel like sometimes you kind of carry this label around, almost a scarlet letter on your life, and you walk in the doors of a church, and you're wondering, am I really welcome? Can I really, you know, get involved kind of all the way. I know the financial struggle of what that's like. And for some of you, it's not only financial, but then you had to have had a journey through single parenting. And so I just want to tell you, if this is your story, you are welcome here. And I'm sorry. Now, for others of us, this is your story, but you caused it. Like, you said something, you did something, you cheated. It was kind of your pattern of behavior that caused it all to kind of crash and burn. And this may not be a very popular thing to say, but I want to tell you that I'm sorry to you as well. Some of the things that your ex said about you, some of the things that their family said about you or posted about you, you carry those words with you even to this day. And it's not like this was, you know, exactly your most ideal season of life. And the truth is, you actually still cared about them a little bit too. So now you're kind of trying to sort your life out. And so now you're kind of hurting this person that you do still care about. And so now guilt is in the equation. And for a lot of us, I mean, you had to kind of relocate and start a new life somewhere else altogether. And so if that's your story, I want to tell you that you are welcome here too. And I'm sorry that you've had to go through all this. So I want to start and tell you a little bit of my story. So my ex and I met in college in Athens at the University of Georgia. We got engaged there, got married there. We had our rehearsal dinner at this spot on Broad Street downtown called the East West Bistro, which, as fate would have it, also did not make it. So that sort of thing happens sometimes, right? Rest in peace, cakes and ale. I understand where I'm feeling your pain. But things started out pretty good, and how could they not? Two Georgia Bulldogs kind of doing life together. We weren't one of those house-divided kind of families. You know, one spouse is a Georgia grad, Georgia fan. One spouse is a Tech fan. I know my story's a little messed up. That's like next level, you know, and I'm pretty sure the Bible talks about not doing that. But anyways, things got off to a pretty good start. This was 2008, and as you may remember, 2008 is when the recession happened, and so my hours at work took a pretty big hit, and we ended up moving here to Atlanta just because it was going to be cheaper for us to live because of a pretty unique housing opportunity that we had. So I was working remotely, and I traveled a lot on the weekends, and I probably made 1,000 mistakes as a 22-year-old newly married person, but as I was prepping for our time together today, a couple really stick out. I mean, one, I should not have traveled as much as I did. I think as guys, especially, we want to achieve, we want to provide, we want to like make a name for ourselves right out of college, we want to like just do something. And I think I sort of prioritized that at the expense of our relationship, and that was a bad trade. And the other mistake is, and this might sound silly to you, but we didn't have a lot of community. We didn't join a community group here. We had done community group at church in Athens, and we knew when the next group link was coming. We knew it was coming in August. We knew it was one in January. And we said, we were kind of busy, so we'll just do the one in January, not August. And unfortunately for us and for me, January was too late. And that might sound weird or silly to you, but the truth is, for a lot of us, a lot of you, I mean, your community group wouldn't let your marriage fall apart even if you wanted it to. Some of you have tried, and we didn't have that support system in our life. But things were pretty good early on. You know, the fights weren't all that intense or anything. I guess it all sort of started, I would be traveling for work, and there would be some nights where my ex would go out with friends. And I'm not talking like 7 o'clock Target run, by the way. I totally love Target run. You know, we're talking like 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock going out. And that actually ended up becoming more of a thing even for the nights and weekends that I was in town. And I can recall some of the conversations we would have. I would try to stand up for myself and say, I don't think this is good for our relationship. And some of the feedback that I got was that was just me being controlling. And ultimately, there would be nights where she would not come home at all. And when you look back on it, it's all so clear where everything was headed. But to be honest, in the middle of it, I did not see it coming. And so I had to figure out what was going on. Some of you have been there before. You just know when something's weird in a relationship. And so she was out with her friends, and I sat down on our hideous brown IKEA couch. I can still smell it. And I pulled out her computer, and I opened it to Facebook. And I don't know if that was right or wrong. Perhaps we can put that in the small group questions for this week. You know, should Josh have read somebody else's messages without them knowing? Or have you ever read somebody else's messages without them knowing? But it's what I did. And what I found was pretty revealing. And it turns out that some of the nights that she was out with her friends, she wasn't with her friends. And she wasn't staying at their house, but with a guy from work. And it was more than friends. And so she came home, and I confronted her, and she was pretty upset, as she probably should have been. And then she spoke 10 words that would forever alter the rest of my life. And some of you have heard these words before. Here's what she said. She said, "I don't love you anymore, and I want a divorce." Now, needless to say, I got pretty good at counseling after that, or at least pretty regular. I would go see my counselor, Ellen. Not the Ellen, by the way. That would be awesome. Yeah, every day at 4, you know, we dance a little bit. Celebrities pop in. It's awesome. No, I would go visit my counselor, Ellen. And I remember on one of the first visits, she handed me a sheet of paper, and it had the stages of grief on it. And some of you have seen these before. She said, "You're going to experience all of these." Now, little did she know that as a sports fan in the state of Georgia, I was actually quite familiar with these. And some years, it's even like a calendar, you know. It's like August, September, October, November, December. So it's sad because it's true. But she was right. And I did. And for a couple sessions, my ex would come with me and then she stopped. And I did a lot of things in that season to try to fight for our marriage. I did elaborate things. I did expensive things. I did embarrassing things. I said some really hurtful things. And ultimately, none of it worked. And so one morning in late spring, I walked by myself into the Fulton County Courthouse, my last day as a married man, and I walked out divorced. And so here's what I want to do. I want to, with the rest of our time, I want to unpack my story just a little bit further through three words, three themes that I experienced in that season of my life, and in some ways will always be experiencing a little bit. And here's what those three words are. The themes of failure, forgiveness, and future. What do you do when it's game over and you lose? What do you do? You know, how do you begin to forgive somebody? You know, can you, should you even forgive somebody? And then how do you move on? How do you heal? Chances are you have experienced one of these themes in your life, perhaps even right now. If you have ever experienced the heartache and heartbreak of divorce, I know that you have. So let's talk about everyone's favorite topic. Let's talk about failure. Perhaps when we're done, we can just do an open mic up here. You can come up and share your failure. That would be awesome. Really enjoyable. For me, this was definitely mine. Growing up a church kid, divorce was never going to be a part of my story. I just didn't believe in it. And in fact, in premarital counseling, we agreed that divorce was never going to be an option for us. I still don't know what to do with that to this day. We stood at an altar and said, "Till death do us part." That was the standard. And you know what's weird? This might be weird to hear me say this, but I actually still believe in that standard. I still believe that marriage should last a lifetime. And maybe it's because I know what it feels like when it doesn't, but I still believe that. So when I say failure, I guess what I'm getting at is this. What do? When your story doesn't hit your standards, have you ever felt this tension before? And it may not be in this specific area that we're talking about today. Your life and your story may have nothing to do with divorce. But have you ever experienced this tension before where your ideal life is here and your real life is here? I set out for it to be like this and now it's like this. I said it was going to be like this. I promised. I wanted. This was my hope. And this is my real life. Have you ever felt the tension between your story and your standards before? For me, this tension has a name. And its name is shame. I am tempted all the time to hide my story because I'm just embarrassed by it. Shame just reminds me all the time that I had this thing in my past that's not perfect. And perhaps for you, it's not shame. Perhaps for you, that voice and that tension is called guilt because you've got this gap in your life, but you caused it. You caused it. And guilt's just always reminding you that you're the screw up, that you're the one who did this. We're so familiar. And what we all know is true is that the voices of shame and guilt have a way of eating us alive. They just leave us feeling not okay, even if it's not our fault. And some of us are here today, we've gone through a divorce or we've experienced some sort of pain in our life. And we would say, you know what? It's not even fully my fault. But isn't it true? You still have that thing inside of you that just goes, it's not my fault, but I still don't feel okay. I still feel like I'm short somehow in life. I know exactly what that feels like. And so I'll tell you what I tend to do, and I think what a lot of us tend to do, and I've picked this up from some conversations with a lot of friends, we tend to do this. We tend to justify. And I don't mean make excuses, justify. I mean, we try to bring them into alignment. Because when there's a gap between your story and your standards, it just makes us feel not okay. And so what we do is we change our story. We don't tell the whole truth. We just sort of twist it a little bit. Or we change the standard. We sort of dumb it down a little bit. This happens all the time where I live in Athens, Georgia, where a college student comes in, you know, when they were in high school, when they were in Inside Out, they had one set of beliefs and one standard. And then about 2 months into college, they behave their way into a whole different set of beliefs because their story changed. And when their story changed and there's now the gap between their story and their standard, it's just sort of unsettling. It just leaves us feeling not okay. In fact, I'm not even sure we were meant to handle that kind of tension. And so we justify. But unfortunately, what I have found and what you may have found too is that when we do that, it just doesn't seem to make me feel any better. When I change my story, when I change the standard to try to make myself feel okay, I still don't feel okay because deep down in my soul, I know that it's forged. I know that it's not real. But the good news that I bring you today is this. I have discovered a way to be okay. And it's good news for anybody in the room, regardless of what your situation is, if you ever feel like your story just falls a little short. And this is how the Apostle Paul described it in the book of Romans. He said, "For all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God," which is a really churchy way of saying that everybody knows what it feels like to have that gap. Everybody knows what it is like to have that skeleton in your closet, to have that one thing that you're not proud of. And for you, it may be coming to your mind right now. Everybody knows what it's like to have that, to have this sort of area where your standard, you didn't hit your standard. And if you're a Christian, it's sort of double fold because not only is it, am I not hitting my standard, but I fell short of perhaps God's standard. What do I do with that? And that's a little discouraging to read it, but it's also kind of encouraging because perhaps you're here today and you thought you were the only one. You thought you were the only one who looks good on the outside, but on the inside, it's just feeling like a failure. You just feel like a failure. And here I am saying, no, well, there's at least two of us. And Paul's going, no, there's at least three of us. In fact, everybody knows what that feels like. How, that's kind of encouraging to me that everybody in this room knows what it feels like to have a part of their life where they're not winning, where they made a mistake, where they blew it. And so what do you do? Is there a way to be okay? And then what he says next is, I think, one of the most encouraging things you will ever hear. And it's really the whole Christian message summed up in one sentence. So if you're here and you're not a much of a church person, I'm so glad you're here. You're about to hear what we as Christians believe and what this whole thing is about. And this is what he said. Because everybody knows what it's like to fall short. And everybody is justified. Well, hold on. I thought we weren't justified. I thought we weren't doing that. He's going, no, there is a way to be okay. There is a way to make things right. And here's how we make things right. We are justified freely by his grace, God's grace, through the redemption that is in Christ Jesus. In other words, when I try to change my story or I try to change my standard to justify myself, what I'm essentially saying is I don't need God's grace or God's mercy in my life. But the whole point of Christianity is that everyone fell short of the standard. And so God sent us a Savior, Jesus Christ, and his death on the cross atones for every mistake and every failure in your life and makes you right with God. In other words, you don't have to justify your story. Jesus already has. You don't have to justify your story. Jesus already has. And this is how he can stand with a woman at the well who's been married 5 times, working on number 6, and look her in the eye. I just imagine him hugging her around the neck and saying, I don't condemn you. And if you're here today, and I don't know what your story is like. But if you're here today and you struggle and the voices of shame and guilt just remind you of your past and remind you of that thing, that area that you fell short, I want you to hear what I believe is God's message for you today. And it's this. He's saying to you, I don't condemn you. And we're not changing the standard. We're not lowering the standard. It's better than that. This is the grace that you want. He's saying, I don't condemn you. It doesn't mean there's not going to be consequences. We won't have to sort some things out. But your Heavenly Father is saying to you today, with all of your failure, and he knows all of it. He's saying, even still, I don't condemn you. not all that long ago, we did a series called Future Family. And in part one, our teaching pastor, Andy Stanley, did a whole talk about marriage and divorce, which is this huge, loaded, very controversial topic. And I love how he summarized the whole thing. It's the only thing he's ever said that did not rhyme. He just has a way of speaking and just everything rhymes. But look how what he said. This is so beautiful, so poetic. This was his summary of all of Jesus' teachings on this topic. He said, Jesus always taught and pointed toward an ideal, but he didn't condemn people when they fell short. He always taught and pointed toward an ideal. So he raised the bar on truth really higher than it had ever been. He raised the standard higher than it had ever been. But he didn't condemn people when they fell short. He raised the bar on grace higher than it had ever been. And so the question for you today and the question for me today is, will I, will you, will we change our story, change our standard to try to justify ourselves, or will we receive God's justifying grace in the gap? Now, can I tell you one other thing about shame? And this is just my personal experience and opinion. I believe you have a God who loves you, who wants great plans for your life. I believe you have a spiritual enemy who wants to wreck and destroy your life. And I believe your spiritual enemy is trying to get you to make a trade. And here's the trade he's trying to get you to make. And if you're a married adult, if you're a married person, especially if you're married and you feel like things are not going well right now, please tune back into me in this moment. This is the trade I believe he's trying to get married adults in this room to make, and it's this. You have an enemy who wants you to trade the pain of marriage for the shame of divorce. The pain of marriage, and I'm not talking about like you're in like a dangerous situation. I'm talking about all the pain in life, you know, in your marriage. He's saying like the fights that you're in are only getting bigger, right? They're only getting worse. The financial tension, it's only getting bigger. The kind of sexual stuff that you can't work out, it's not getting any better. And you have a spiritual enemy who's saying, what if, you know, you could just trade that in? I mean, that's permanent, he's saying. He's saying that's permanent. But you could trade it in for a little temporary, short-term shame. And it might be a little embarrassing, and you might have to get off Facebook a little bit. But he's trying to get you to make that trade. And I'm not sure he's telling you the truth. The University of Chicago did a study, and the one thing they were trying to figure out was the answer to this question: does divorce make people happy? Does divorce actually make people happy? And so they called thousands of married adults across the United States, and they asked them one question: are you happy in your marriage? So on the count of three, let's all say our answer to that question. And then yes, I am, honey. Don't answer the question. But that's the question they asked them. And they said, okay. And for anybody who said they were not happy, they said, we would like to call you back in 5 years and just check in and see what we learn. And so a lot of people were unhappy. They called them back. And here's what they found. You know, 5 years later, some people had gotten divorced, moved on, found somebody else. Some people had stayed together. And for the people who had gotten divorced, one in five was happily remarried to somebody else 5 years later. So they had gotten divorced, they had started dating, met somebody, got engaged, got married, were still happy 5 years later, one in five. But for the couples who stayed together, 67% were now happy in that same marriage. So the University of Chicago would say to you today, if you're here and you're not happy, but your goal is to be happy 5 years from now, say, happily married 5 years from now, one in five chance, 20%, if you leave this marriage and try to find a new one. Over three times more likely though, 67% if you stay in the same marriage that you're in right now. Needless to say, this perplexed the researchers. Here's what they said. They found that divorce did not reduce symptoms of depression for unhappily married adults, or raise their self-esteem, or increase their sense of mastery. In other words, how much control you feel like you have in your life. A lot of us feel out of control in our lives, and if we're being honest, we sort of blame that on our spouse, and we think if we could just leave them, then our control comes back. And their studies would say no, that's probably an issue that we have to work through as individuals. It's not so much that they are the ones that make you feel out of control. That's a you thing that you got to work through. You're not going to feel any more control of your life if you leave. On average, compared to unhappy spouses who stayed married. In fact, they actually found that depression went up and alcohol abuse went up. So what's happening? Many currently happily married spouses have had extended periods of marital unhappiness, often for quite serious reasons, including alcoholism, infidelity, verbal abuse, emotional neglect, depression, illness, and work reversals. Why then did these marriages survive and other marriages did not? The marital endurance ethic appears to play a big role. Many spouses said that their marriage got happier, not because they and their partner resolved problems, we might never resolve them, but because they stubbornly outlasted them. Anybody here got a stubborn spouse? You just want to, turns out that's a strength. Turns out that's a strength. And don't miss this. Married people, don't miss this. Turns out it was the marital pain that was the temporary thing after all. So don't make that trade. Okay, let's talk about forgiveness. Is there a name or face that comes to mind? All of us wrestle with this in some way, shape, or form. I want to go back to Jesus' words here, and this is one of Jesus' final moments on earth. He's actually hanging on the cross, and what is Jesus doing in the story I'm about to read? He is praying for you in his last moments on the cross. Classic Jesus. What would Jesus do? And some of you have read this before. Jesus said, "Father, forgive them," which I just want to call, it's always been a little unnerving to me. I just want to call one of those Saved by the Bell timeouts, Zach Marr style, everything freezes. And I just want to go, hey, you say forgive them, but why? Like, why? These were supposed to be your friends. They betrayed you. They mocked you. They drug you all over town. They beat you. In fact, all of human history was pointing to this moment because mankind, we kind of messed things up. And God sent us a savior. And what did we do to the savior? We killed him. And so I'm just wondering why. Like, why should we forgive them? Why forgive them? And side note, if somebody tells you that you should forgive the people in your life that hurt you, I think that's an okay, pretty fair question to ask as well. Why should I forgive them when they took everything from me? You know, why should I forgive them? I'm never going to be able to work in this industry again, or at least not in this town, in this industry again. And maybe I could forgive them if it was just kind of between me and them, but because of what this did to my kids and our kids. And now you're saying you want me to forgive them. And I'm just saying, why? Like, why should I forgive them? Why should you forgive the people that hurt you the most? What for? And then Jesus gives us the most enlightening for. For they know not what they do. And isn't it true that the person or the persons who hurt you the most had no idea what they were doing? They don't know. They didn't know it then. They don't know it now. They don't know the wounds that they caused you. You lie awake even still at night and you think about it, and they just don't. They don't know what they did to you. In fact, in Jesus' case, they actually thought they were helping. They thought he was a threat and they were doing the right thing. And this is hard to say and it's a little hard to hear. But what's probably true is the person in my life and the person in your life who hurt us the most probably thought they were doing the right thing too. They were probably just trying to make the best right decision for their life. They didn't know what they were doing at the time. In fact, how many of us have had a, I don't know what I was doing at the time moment? You look back and you're like, what was I doing dating that person or with that haircut? What was I doing wearing that, you know, back in the certain time in your past? We've all sort of been there. And the truth is, the person who hurt us the most probably had no idea what they were doing. And when I meditate on these words, when I really consider they know not what they do, they know not what they do, they know not what they do, I think that's where grace starts. I think that's where mercy starts. What if the person who hurt you the most is not such a bad person after all? You're like, oh, they are. Give me that microphone, white boy. I'll tell you what a bad person looks like. What if my ex-wife is actually a really good person, just trying to make the best decision with their life as possible? Can you extend that kind of grace to the person who hurt you the most? And it doesn't mean we condone what they did, right? It doesn't mean that there won't be consequences, but can you extend that kind of grace? What's probably true is the hurt that they caused in your life was probably coming from some hurt in their own life, in their own past. And so the question for you today is, will you pass on that hurt to the next person or persons in your life, or will you release it? Will you release it? And when you do, you might play a part in healing some of the hurt in their life, but I know that you will play a part in healing some of the hurt in your own life. In my last few moments, I want to talk about how to move forward in your future, and I want to try to be as practical as I can be, because for a lot of us, you are going through this right now. This is just like, you're like, oh my gosh, this is my story. Or somebody sent you a link to watch this online because they care about you and then know that you can relate. Or maybe you're here and somebody that you care about is going through this very same situation that I had to go through, and you're trying to figure out how to help. I want to tell you, just get real practical. And one of the worst parts about this season in my life was having to tell all the people in my life what was going on. I'll never forget calling my best friend Ryan and saying, hey, I need to come over and tell you about what's going on in my life right now. And then we need to drive to my parents' house in Northwest Atlanta and wake them up at 11 o'clock at night, drop a bomb on them that they had no idea was coming. I remember texting my boss and some of the leadership at our church and saying, I need to meet with you ASAP. And part of it was because they needed to know what was going on, but the other part of it was I had no idea what to do. Remember, this was never going to be a part of my story. And the more and more I talked to people, the more and more I sort of let people into my life, I heard one common theme, and it's what the advice I want to offer you as well today. They said, you need to develop a plan. Like, you need to develop a plan, because one of two things could happen in this trial. This whole situation could either submarine your life and your faith altogether, or it could put you on a path toward actual good things. You need to develop a plan. So here's the plan that they helped me to put together. And it's not rocket scientists, but it's what I did. And I think it's helpful. The first step was this, was the Bible. I mentioned earlier, we don't have time to talk through everybody's specific story, but there's a lot of specifics in the room in your story. So if you're going through a divorce situation right now, honestly, you owe it to yourself to see what, you know, this book has to say for you. For me, this was such an place of encouragement for me in that season. This book came alive to me. And for a lot of us, we walk around the planet and we look at our lives and we go, I just wish God could speak to my circumstance. I wish God could speak to my story and what I should do. And there's a chance that he already has. These words and these letters, they have a tremendous relationship advice and marriage advice and even divorce advice. So you owe it to yourself to kind of pick one up and see what you can find. The second thing is this was wise counsel. You need other people in your life to make decisions for you. I was given this advice and it was tremendous. I got about five other guys together and I said, will you go with me to Cracker Barrel regularly? And they said yes. So and why wouldn't they? Because the hash brown casserole and all the good things. But you need other people to make decisions for you. For me, I was too emotional and I was too bias to make decisions on my own. And this was great too. And it's a little terrifying, but again, we walk around the planet and we go, God, what's your will for my life? I just wish you would just show me your will for my life. And I got the opportunity to invite these other men into my life and we would meet for breakfast. We'd talk about what's going on. And you know, you're not going to meet with them forever. This is just going to be a season probably. But I got to say, will you just sort of help me navigate this? Will you make some hard decisions for me? They determined if and when I was ever going to date again and all that stuff. And it was such a gift. So if this is you or you're watching this, you need to find three, four, five other women, and just invite them to sort of journey with you. You might even be able to find some of them here at church. And then lastly, you just need time. And for me, this wise counsel were the people who decided my timeline. I've heard a lot of people say that perhaps a good timeline, if you are going through a divorce or have experienced divorce recently, is that you should take off, as in like wait before you date, 6 months for every year that you were married. So if you're married 4 years, like you might need to wait 2 years before you're ready to do that again. If you're married 8 years, like you might need to wait 4 years before you're ready to do that. I shared that from stage recently and somebody said, you know, I'm 65 years old. I was married 40 years. I'm not going to make it. And so it's not a hard and fast rule. You kind of got, I just empathize with the guy, you know. But if you're 65 and looking for somebody, you know, I got a friend for you. But it's not a hard and fast rule. And I know for a lot of us, to be honest, that sounds extreme. That sounds extreme. That sounds intense. And what I would just remind you of and what I would just remind me of is that what we have gone through is intense. It is far more like having both of your legs cut off than it is dissolving a business partnership or deserting a regiment. And what you want is just to kind of move on, pretend like it never happened. But what you need is to allow time for God to heal your heart. And every month that goes by, you'll see things more clearly. You need to give him time to do that. And he might use another person in your life to bring about some of that healing. But often his medicine looks like his word, the prescriptions of some really wise people in your life, some wise counsel, and then it's just time for him to work. So I'm going to invite the band back up, amazing band back up, and we're going to sing a little bit more of one of those songs that we sang earlier. And as they're doing, I want to show you one more thing. And this is for anybody in the room who would say, I'm struggling today. Anybody in the room, it doesn't matter what your situation is, your story might be totally different from mine. But if you are here today or you're watching this online and you're in a season that you would sort of describe as, I don't know why this is happening. I don't know why this is happening. This doesn't feel fair. This feels like more than I can handle. If that's you, I want to show you what could be. I want to show you what could be for your story. If you walk with God, if you journey with him, and honestly, the fact that you're here today is proof that you want in some ways to walk with God through this season. The fact that I'm here today might be tremendous encouragement that he wants you to walk with him too. So here's what Paul said in the book of Romans. He said, we rejoice in our sufferings, which I never understood. I never understood why we would be glad when bad things happen. I never understood how something good could come from something bad. But what he's about to show you is what he knew to be true and what I can testify that I lived to. Just like those stages of grief that I lived kind of month by month, I lived this. And this could be your future if you apply some of the things we're talking about today, regardless of what your struggle is, regardless of what your trial is. Paul says we can actually be glad in our sufferings because it's putting us on a path. We rejoice in our suffering, knowing that suffering produces endurance. In other words, Kanye was right. That which does not kill us only makes us stronger. And look what happens. That endurance, that perseverance, it produces character. It changes who you are. And this is how some of us can say, you know what? I never would have chose this, and I wouldn't wish this on my worst enemy, but I'm a different person now. I got character now. And now that my heart is healthy and whole, it's like I'm springing up hope in my life for the first time in a long time. And what do we know about hope? Hope does not disappoint us. So my brothers and sisters who have ever been disappointed before, how good is that? What the enemy intended for evil in your life has only put you on a path towards greater hope and a bright future with God. But your hope is not my story, that I got an awesome wife and a couple cute kids. Your hope is that God does not waste your sufferings, but instead he will redeem them. Because what you got to do, don't justify your story on your own. Don't change your story or your standard to try to make yourself okay. Instead, receive God's justifying grace. Some of us are carrying around unforgiveness and resentment and bitterness like a backpack that we can't take off. And so the call for you today is just to release it. I mean, how much longer are you going to take that and carry that into the future? Instead, today, you can release it and find healing and just in the relief of that. Today, for some of you, is a day to just let it go. And for others of us who are in this suffering journey, may God lead you on this path that what started as suffering ends with hope.
Well, once again, thanks for listening. If you live in or near the city of Decatur, we would love for you to attend one of our weekend gatherings at Decatur City Church. For information, service times, and information about our fabulous children's environments and our student environments, visit us at DecaturCity.org. That's DecaturCity.org.